Okay. There's some extra here if there's anybody wants from yesterday. Okay, let's begin. Firstly, I wanted to mention that yesterday we had a discussion. We went to a home halachah about Nichum Aveilim. I just want to mention that when you're doing Nichum Aveilim, a person should be careful not to talk about Dvarim B'Talim when you're in the house. And the purpose of Nichum Aveilim is to speak about the Nifter and the Nifter's life, ask questions about it. You know, there is a din that you're not supposed to start talking until the Oval starts talking to you, but once he starts talking to you, you shouldn't schmooze about sports and things of that sort. You should speak about the Nifter's, life. And to prepare that, there should be some standard questions that you have when you go to a shiva house, where the person was born, what were their hobbies, did they ever take a trip there to Israel, in a real way, rather than speak about Dvarim B'Talim. That's the very important thing when it comes to Nichum Aveilim. So I wanted to mention that. A lot of times, you haven't seen a friend in many years, and you see him in a Beis Oval. The Rav has this chiddush that the Isser of Shei L'Shalom is on the whole bias. So you really shouldn't ask him how you're doing and everything, schmooze in the house. You should only do it outside the house. In the house is not it's not right. I'll be dead. Okay, so that's the first nikud I wanted to mention. Second nikud I just wanted to mention is that when we mentioned by the halacha about a rofe, part of that, the concept of tov shevarofim yorah legehenim is one line here in the Mechaber. I don't think we mentioned it, is that v'lo yehei sham gadol mimenu, meaning if he's not the best doctor, then you shouldn't be the doctor, then send him to the best doctor. That's part of the echoes of that din of tov shevarofim yorah legehenim. Okay? So that's the other nekuda I wanted to mention. Okay, wanted to begin today with concept of end-of-life issues and how we deal with that, halacha l'maisa, because it has to do with these simanim, so I wanted to make sure we discuss that. There really are three different shitas of how you deal with someone at the end of life. What you have to do or what you don't have to do regarding taking care of a person. The basic three shitas are, Rav Bleich Shlita holds, is a person has to try to do everything. I'll give you a scenario that someone's very, very ill, an older person, let's say in their 80s, and they're failing terribly, and in a few days maybe they would pass away. Every case is different, but I'm just giving an example. Let's say, would you have to put in a feeding tube, and that's the only way the person could eat? Maybe it'll prolong the person's life, a week or two. So Rav Bleich Shlita is of the opinion that you'd have to do that. You have to try to do everything you can to try to save the person. On the other extreme,
Does that include respirators? Like living off of a machine?
Yeah, it seems that way. It seems that way. That's what he seems to be his shita. That's what it seems to be.
For many years like that, right?
Yeah, it seems to be that's a shita. Yeah. So that's one shita. The other shita on the other extreme is Rav Schachter Shlita shita, and that is that really it's totally on the patient, what the patient wants. And if the patient doesn't have, cognition, the family members would have to try to think about what that person would want. The Malavad Lahoyal in the Chuvis, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, Chelek Bey Simon Dalad, points out the doctors could make the decision. But I once discussed this with Shechter Shlit, and he said that the family should think about what the patient would want. It'd be good if you talked about it with the patient beforehand. So that's the other extreme, Shita. And the middle approach is like Rav Shlomo Zalman, which is usually, I think, the minhag ha'olam, and that is that to do hydration, to make sure that there's sugar and water being given to the patient at the end of their life, and not you're not doing anything, but on the other hand, you're not doing an extreme thing, and that's in the mincha shlomo and simin sadi aleph oschof dalet. So I think the minhag is to follow that middle shita, and the stipler is quoted here in Rav Schachter's Sefer, in Simon Lamed Vav Nikvei Tzon, in the Igris Agon, a stipler, in Simon Kuf Tzadi, that he once heard that the Stipler himself said he once heard they're supposed to do everything to prolong Chai Achola, even if it's going to be for Chai Shah for a limited amount of time, you have to do everything. He said he heard that when he was a young man and he thought it was wrong. He said he didn't think it was a bar samcha. And one of the rayas for that he quotes is from the Ramah in Simon Shin Lamed Tes, which we'll get to Bli Neder today, where the Ramah writes you can remove you can do hasara samoneya. It's mutal hasara davra moneya, that's preventing someone's death. It's an indirect, you're not doing a maisa begufo. I don't know, let's say there's some noise being made outside that's prolonging someone's life. So if you could stop that noise, the Ramah writes, that's mutter, because you're not directly hurting the person. So therefore, that's why he thought that was based on that Ramah, you see that obviously doing some extreme things to be Ma'arei Chai Shah, if a person's in a lot of pain, is not considered to be obligatory. In fact, Rav Moshe writes three times in the Tshuvas, in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Amud Dalet Shin, that in the situation, and also in, I'll give you the three, it's also in Siman Ayin Dalet and Siman Ayin Hey, he writes as well in that same Chelek Beis, that if the doctors don't know a certain refuah, but they can be ma'arich his life, but the patient's in terrible pain, then he says you really shouldn't give it to him. And it seems like hydration would also would be suffice. So it seems like Ramosha and the Stifler seem to hold like that middle opinion as well. Halacha l'maisa. So these are three shitas that are said about, you know, doing, like I said, everything is case by case, but I'll give you a concrete example. There are situations of a person, you know, has a concept of a DNR, which means do not resuscitate. And, you know, usually we would shy away from having a person sign that. As I said, every case is different because we want to save a person's life. Someone in their 40s, 50s, or 60s, or 70s, whatever. It could be every case is different. But if you have a situation where a person has been deathly ill and has no, let's say, seichel, no cognition or anything, and if you don't sign a DNR and they have and their heart stops, they're obligated, I'll pee the state law, to break their ribs. I mean, you know, that seems to be a bit extreme. And there you'd have Rav Schechter's shita that makes a lot of sense, that, you know, what the patient would want, or you know, if the patient wanted to sign a DNR, they could, because that's their decision, or the family would put themselves in the place of the patient and say, It's crazy to have this person's ribs, you know, broken in such a situation. The person wouldn't want it. So to say, like I said, generally we don't want to do it, but to say categorically that every single case that a DNR is wrong, I don't think that's I know Rav Schechter's shita doesn't hold like that. And in the case I gave, I think it would be it's quite understandable why it would be okay. But like I said, in general, not. But every case is case by case different. So those are the three shitas regarding that situation, and it has to be every case, has, like I said, has to be dealt with differently. Now, I wanted to just build up that shita that it's totally in the person's decision themselves. So Rav Schechter has the quotes that we had was in Siman Lamed Vav and Ikvikson. If you look back in Siman Lamed Dalet, he discusses the following case, and the Magid Avraham has in Siman Shin Chav Ches Sifkan Vav, in the name of the Tshuvas Radbaz, that if the doctor wants to give a certain medicine to someone on Shabbos and the Chola refuses, so the Magid Avraham quotes the Tshuvas Radbaz, you're kofahim to accept the medicine, and the Prima Gadim says it's Chasidus Shel Shtus, the patient is acting incorrectly, and the Torah writes V'nishmartim, you shouldn't be Machal Shabbos, Mokum Kuch Nefesh. What the patient is saying is ridiculous, and therefore, Kol Shekein during the weekday, Al Pi Halacha, you kofa him. So the Gemara says in Bava Kama and Pehe Aleph, Mikan Shenit Rishus L'Rofe L'Rafos, that it's usur for the rofe to metapa begufa chola without the rishus. Without whose rishus? Doesn't mean the rishus of the chola. It means the Torah gives you rishus to the rofe to be merapa. And therefore, in a standard situation where it makes sense that the fellow should receive medicine, then in fact you force it upon him. So this is what Rabbi Yaakov Emden states in the Moruksiyah, the following, that if it's a refuah vadai that's going to heal this guy, and for some reason the guy refuses, it's ridiculous. You're called for the chola against his will, both on Shabbos and during the week. But if it's a certain medicine that's not been proven, and it might cause the chola pain, then Rabbi Yaakov Emden is masber, in such a situation you're not kofa. So Rav Shechter Shlita points out even further, he says, that when there is a umdenu de muchach, that Ruba, the people, would not want this refuah because of the yisurim that would be caused, so Rav Moshe writes in Yordea, as we mentioned before, in Chelik Beis, Simenai and Dal, it's a different place though, Anaf Gimel. Chelik Beis, Simen Kufay and Dal, Anaf Gimel, that it's usher to do things that would be marach his life, but often that'll be yisurim. To be marach chayishah, the often be yisurim, will be a problem. And that's his rayas from that Ramah, that we said you're allowed to remove a hasara samoneya al pi halacha, al pi din. So what comes out here is three different madregas, Rosh Hashanah Shlita wants to say. If there's an umdu nemuchach, that anyone would want this medicine, so even if this guy says, I don't want it, butla daita, it's a kolodim, we force him to accept it, because we say, vishmartim od nafsho sechem, and that's it. That's one extreme. The other extreme is where there's umdu nemuchach, that no one would want this medicine, and this fellow says he wants it, we would not listen to him, because that's an extreme. We would also say, butla daita, kolodim. The middle category is where there's no umdu nemuchach, and this is what Rabbi Yaakov Emden is being masvered, and then it's totally on the chola, and what the chola wants, al pi din. So you have these three levels, and in the case that I was suggesting, where it was, you know, in the situation where it's not clear, the case we were given where it's not clear, you know, one way or the other, it's really up to the chola to make that decision. And Rav Shechter Shlita points out as a parallel to this, is you have by Suffolk Pikuach Nefesh. By Suffolk Pikuach Nefesh, we know that we don't go bus a rov. The Gemara writes in Yuma Peidalad and Beis. We don't go bus a rov. So if it's one in a thousand, the Chassam Sofer writes, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes in Yordea, Simen Shinun Zayin Sifkat and Aleph, from the Tshuva's Chassam Sofer, that if it's one in a thousand, that a person, you know, that it, you know, it could cause a danger, we didn't call that a Suffolk Sakana. It happens to be against the Maram Shik. Maram Shik says if it's 1 in 10,000 that someone might die, that's called a Sakana. You're allowed to Mechal Shabbos. But if you assume like the Chassam Sofer, that's what the Chassam Sofer assumes, that if it's 1 in 1,000, that's not called a Suffolk Sakana. But where there's no umdu nemuchach one way or another, so that we would say, butla deitzel kol adam, so the Chassam, the Chafetz Chaim and the Chazon Ish paskin, that it's totally on the das of the fellow that's mutal b'sakana. If he's choshish to this miut, then it's a suffix sakana. If he himself is not choshish, then you say shomer p'soim Hashem. So that's a very nice parallel, al pi halacha, that you have these like three madregas, and it's totally in the patient. Number one, regarding what? Regarding the halacha of, you know, saving oneself, and regarding what? Regarding chil Shabbos, al pi din also as well. So these are totally on the person's the patient's, you know, das himself. And the makor of this whole mahalich is based on a gemara on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph and Maseches Bab Metzia, where the gemara darshins a pasuk in Kitetze where it says, Elev Hu Nosei Es Nafsho. That's in the category of paying a guy on time. If you have an employee, you got to pay his parnasa. And the gemara in Bab Metzia on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph has an amazing drasha. It says that a guy will do so much for parnasa, and it's a big Musar Haskos to try to make sure, Bez Hashem, with Siyata Shema, we have parnasa. The Gemara says in Kufi Beis Manaf, Nei Ma Olazeh Bekevish, why is this guy climbing up on a ramp, Venitla Be'ilun, and he has to, crawl onto a tree for a parnasa, or Musar, Esasma, Lemitza, Loas, Haro? You see how important it is that a person will work for his parnasa by not paying a guy on time, you're like killing him. So everyone asks on that Gemara, aren't you over Nishmar Tamon Nafshal Seichem? So the Teretz is not true. The Note of Yudah says in Simon Yud in the Madura Tinyan in Yordea that someone's an ani needs a parnasa, the Torah matters you to Lomaisi. He has no choice. Suffik chai olam is docha vadai chai shah. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah of Zayim and Aleph. Suffik chai olam, which is you're not sure, you know, you have a possibility you could live a long time, or maybe not, is docha vadai chai shah. Where is the makor for that? The makor for that is the Haftorah, the Arba Mitzorayim. In Parshas Mitzorah, it's in Malachim Beis, Pirik Zayin. It says that the Arba Mitzorayim were starving, and they were told if they go into the camp of Aram, they would get killed, and they couldn't take it anymore. They had no food. So they went into the camp of the Aram, and they risked their lives, and Hashem had made a nace that there was noise, and they all ran away, so they were okay. But Rav Shachter Shlita points out from there, you see from that story in Navi that it is the choice of the individual to go ahead and what? I mean, who says that we pass like Gehazi and his three sins, three kids? But this is the Mahalach. The Mahalach is that Elav who knows his nafsho, that based on this concept, the Pasuk Tzvi Megala to us, that Safik Chai Olam is Odif Mevadai Chai Shah, and that is Nikba, that is your Kovei Al Pi Das, the Halacha of the person. So that's what this is based on, Al Pi Halacha. So it makes a lot of sense. This particular Mahalach makes a lot of sense in the case of the guy who's refusing the medicine. I'm just saying, in the case of, let's say, the scenario that we gave of the fellow that's, you know, deathly ill with the medicine, normal type of medicine. If the guy says he doesn't want hydration, that's a little bit hard to accept. And that's why I said the minhag olam, I think, is to follow the middle sheet of Shlomo Zalman and Reb Moshe. That we would still give him hydration. It's hard to imagine you're not going to give him hydration. You know, you're going to give him IV, you're going to give him sugar, you give him water, and to say that you don't, to say that, you know, you totally leave it in up to him. You know, we leave it up to him where it's, not clear whether the medicine's going to cause him pain. Not going to cause him pain, but we know if he doesn't have hydration, he's going to die. So that's what we probably, that's the minhag olam, I believe. Okay. You had akasha before?
No.
Okay, good. Fine. So that's the three shittas, Lomai said, I wanted to begin with. That's the first mahalach about how to deal with. And like I said, every case is case by case, but you shouldn't be, ignorant. You shouldn't be ignorant in anything, but you should know those are the general three shittas, and every case is different. And you can't trust anybody because you have to be your own medical advocate, and you're for your whoever's ill. And you have to be on top of everything. It's very important. And don't assume anything. I just lost my father 3 months ago and have many stories that can certainly prove that. But that's very, very important to have these three shittas in mind. Okay, now I wanted to get to the definition of death. Okay, let's get to the definition of death in halacha. Okay? I always find it hard to imagine that the Gemara doesn't have a feferish line anywhere. What exactly is death? Al pi halacha, but it doesn't have a feferish line anywhere. So obviously it's a life and death issue, defining what is death, and it really comes to the fore when you talk about someone, God forbid, who's brain dead. Okay. Someone who's brain dead, Rahman al Islam, is not breathing, okay? When he's on a ventilator, it's mechanically you're pumping air into the person. So a brain dead is a person that has the heart beating but has no breathing on his own at all. So is that person dead or not? Has big nafkaminas. But let's say the person became brain dead, let's say in a car accident, God forbid, and the heart is viable and it's good. Could you take the heart out? If your old brain dead is dead, then you can take the heart out and save someone's life. If your old brain dead is not dead, by you taking the heart out, you're a murderer. So obviously it's a nafkamina mikan lakan and has tremendous ramifications, al pi halacha. So if you look, I gave you in the Mar Makomos, the Mishnah writes in Yuma that if there is a rubble on Pei Gimel and Aleph, if there's rubble that falls on someone, and on Shabbos you want to try to save the person's life, so the Gemara says you're allowed to remove the rubble to try to save someone's life. And the Gemara has a line that do you check up to the guy's nose? So machlekes tanoim, it's in a brisa. One Tana says you check up to his nose. The other Tana says you check up to his heart. That's what the brisa says, commenting on that Mishnah. And Rav Papa, in the Gemara there in Yuma, writes that the machlokas is when you're checking the body from the bottom. But when you're checking the body from the top, meaning from his head downward, can you stop at the nose and check whether he's breathing? Or do you have to go down to the heart? So, Lamaisa, that's the machlokas. Again, the machlokas is when you're going from the bottom, Lamaisa, do you have to go to the, is it enough to go up to the heart? Or do you have to go up to the nose? But Evan and Grace, when you're going from the top to the bottom, you can stop at the nose. So there is a pasuk in Parshas Noach that says that Hashem breathes breathes breath into the nose of a person. Nishus Apol. The Targum Unkla says on that pasuk Ruch Ma'ala, the Koch of Dibor, which we'll get back to Blinetter in one of the Rishonim today. But Lamaisa, it seems to be from that Gemara, and Rav Papa actually quotes that pasuk Kol Hashem Nishmas Ruch Chaim Be'apav. That the definition of life is the ability to breathe. And if there's no breath coming out of the nose, then the person's not alive. That's what it seems from the Pasuk, and that's what it seems. And I remember Harav Tendler Shlita gave this shir. When I was your guy's age, I remember sitting in the shir for that. And I remember doing the Gemara with him about this. And it seems pretty clear from that Gemara. And if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, I'm sorry, in the Mar Makomos, it said Perek Bez Halacha Yudches and Yudtes. It's Hilchos Shabbos. The Rambam writes that you're going through the rubble, and when you check if a person is alive or not, you check his nose. And if there's no breathing, then it seems like he is not. Seems like then he's, God forbid, the nifter. The Mishnah in Olos in Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav also points out Alpidin, that if a person head has been cut off, obviously there's no breathing, and therefore Alpidin, the person is what? The person is dead. So that Mishnah in Olos also, the Rambam quotes this in Hilchos Tumas Meis, that it seems like the person is metame. So if, when you say you're metame, that means he's mace. So it seems that from these makaros that the definition of life is breathing. And therefore, up till now, if you follow this approach, someone, God forbid, that is brain dead, would be dead. Al pi din. Rahman al Islam. So, Reb Moshe in the Tshuvas in Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph Siman Ches, has an interesting tshuva that Reb Schechter quotes in Siman Lamed Vav. It's an interesting tshuva. If you get a chance, you look it up. And that is that someone he discusses who had a gangrene in his arm, terrible gangrene, and it was, he calls it Yavish Lagamri. If he puts tefillin on that arm, would it be Yotze tefillin? So Reb Moshe writes that if he has so, it's so infected with gangrene that it's Yavish Lagamri, there's no circulation. If you would put a pin on the guy's arm, no blood would come out. So Reb Moshe says that is Yavish Lagamri, and the guy would not be Yotze tefillin because there's no circulation. There's no circulation at all. And he says, conversely though, if someone had paralysis in an arm, which his father, Zatzal, Reb Moshe writes about his own father, the last 7 months of his life, he writes in the Tshuva, had paralysis in his arm, and he put tefillin on that arm. And he says that his father was a great Talmud Chacham, was a Goyim. He definitely was Yotze tefillin, because if someone, God forbid, has paralysis, there is circulation in the blood, but it's not dead. As long as there's circulation of the blood, that shows it's not dead. It's not like gangrene where it's Yavish Lagamri. And if you would put a pin on it, blood would come out. Right? It says, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. And therefore he says his father was definitely Yotze Tefillin, no doubt. So if you also say like that, Hagdara of Reb Moshe, so we're saying number one, breathing. And number two, someone is brain dead, the blood is not circulating in the brain. And therefore that also would be an indication that the person is what? The person is dead, God forbid. Ellie, I'm sorry, you had a question before. Yeah.
But Bizman Hazeh, with all of the very basic, simple advancements in technology, CPR, etc., that, you know, like a lot of people in the room know, breathing, if you're not breathing, you can easily resuscitate breathing.
Right, right. We're,
dead and then come.
Yeah, we'll get to it. It's a good point. We're going to get to it with a tshuva d'chassam sofer. Very good. Okay, so that's the mahalach about, perhaps about the breathing and mahalach about circulation. And the truth is, the Ramban in Chulin, the Rambam based, it's really a Gemara in Chulin, and Daf Chafal from an Alf, where it says, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that if a person has his neck broken, and the neck is actually broken with the basar, so the Rambam says, based on that Gemara, in Hilchos Tumah Perek Alf Halacha Tetvav, that he's metame, even though you might say that, and the Ramban points us out in the Chedushim and Chulin Daf Chafal and Beis, the Ramaska had the Amar, that even though the body might be moving a little bit, whatever it is, squiggling, but the bottom line is that there's no breathing, and as long as there's no breathing, and the neck bone has been, you know, cut off, the person is considered to be mitame, and the person is mace. So the Ramban there in Chulin Chaf Amud Beis does envision that a person could be moving and still dead, because al pidin the neck bone with the rov basar has been cut off, and therefore he's considered to be dead al pidin. So as of now, we seem to be going with this approach that brain dead would be considered to be dead, and breathing is the mucker, and that's what Rav David Feinstein, Rav Simon Schlita told me. That Rav David Feinstein said that that's what Rav Moshe held, that breathing was the ikker, and therefore that brain dead would be considered to be dead. I remember Rav Tendler Schlita telling that himself in the name of Rav Moshe, and he holds that himself very strongly, that brain dead is dead, and that's the psak of the Rabbanut to this day and age, that brain dead is considered to be dead. And one of my Rebbeim, my Rav Agon, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg Schlita, also holds like that. Rav Simon Schlita told me he spoke to him twice about this, not just once, but twice, and that is his shita. So, this brings us to the Chassam Sofer. There is a very important shuva, the Chassam Sofer in Yordea, in Simon Shin Lamed Ches, where he discusses there about a Kohen who's a doctor, which nowadays, you know, we can't have a Kohen that's a doctor, because a Kohen can't go to medical school because he's metame. To in Matame Baal to a Meis Akum, right? Meis Akum is a Machlekes Tanoim, Tanakam Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Sivam Samachal from Anaf Machlekes Ramam Raivit. We pass on like the Machari Yesh LaHachmer that a Meis Akum you're not allowed to be Matame Baal, so you should be Machmer. So if the cadavers are Goyim, it's still a problem. You're not allowed to be Matame Baal. Certainly can't touch them, but the Machlekes Tanoim with a Meis Akum is Matame Baal. Definitely be Maga is a problem, but still should be Machmer. So, and maybe if we get a chance by the end of the learning, we'll touch upon that a little bit more. But he had a situation where the Kohen was a doctor, the Chassam Sofer, and he wanted to go in the room to check whether the guy was dead. So, he points out that in the tshuva, the Chassam Sofer says you could go in there, not a problem. This Chassam Sofer is in Simon Shin Lama Ches in Yordea. You can go in there, not a problem. Why is it not a problem? Because you want to bury a guy alive. The Sakonis Tefashos is miskaber on, you know, an Isser of a Kohen in time of the mace. So you want to make sure that he's considered to be what? Considered to be dead. And that's, I don't know if maybe we'll touch upon today quickly about ghosts, whether a Kohen can go in the house of a ghost. We talk a Paskin, it's Usser. Should not go into a house of a ghost. But nonetheless, the Chassam Sofer writes here, he actually quotes from Rabbi Moses Mendelssohn, who was the starter of the Reform movement, that he was very worried about this, and he said you shouldn't bury someone that has died until the body starts decaying. He was so worried about that. So the Chassam Sofer was very upset about that, and the Rabbi Yaakov Emden was very upset about that, because you're basically mevatel mitzvah alana sameis, the Isra and tapur tikbarenu, to do it on time. So, and the Chassam Sofer has a line there that we have a mesorah, that once a person has stopped breathing, he actually writes that, once you stop breathing, our Mesorah is that the person is dead, and you should bury the person, and you don't have to drive yourself crazy about delaying the Levaya and making sure the body decays and to make sure that you're not burying a guy alive. But there's one line later in the Tshuva where he writes, and the body has to be like a rock. So there are those that say, aha, maybe the Chassam Sofer is a new definition of what death is. It's not just breathing, but also your body has to be like a rock. So Rav Zalman Chemi Shlita, Rav Simon told me, said that that wasn't, it's not a different definition. It's a way of being koveya, like Elliot asked before. Maybe the guy fainted and he stopped breathing, right? So that's just a way to ensure that the breathing has stopped. It's just a simon. So the fact that he said that the body's like a rock is an indicative that he stopped breathing. Because otherwise maybe he just fainted and he stopped breathing for a few minutes. But if the body is like a rock, then that's a very clear raya that he stopped breathing. But the hakdara is only breathing. That's the koveya. So you have to obviously, like you said, Ali, discern that and ascertain that. But that's going to be the definition, al pi halacha, of what the Chassam Sofer writes, al pi din. So it comes out that Reb Moshe actually writes in Yordea, Chelek Beis, Simen Kuf Ayin Dal, we mentioned that tshuva before, that when they started doing heart transplants, he writes in one situation where someone only had brain damage, not brain dead, he only had brain damage, that they took the heart out of the guy, and they didn't know how to do it well at that time, the heart transplants. So he says it's a double ritzicha. Number one, they killed the guy because he only had brain damage, right? It wasn't brain dead. And number two, they killed the other fellow because they didn't do the heart transplant properly. So that's the pashtus lamaisa of this first mahalach. And that's, as I said, is a prevalent psak of many posts. I don't think you can have a taina on anyone, Eleni Estaiti, that these are obviously life and death shilas. And if a family member is brain dead, they certainly have who to rely on. These are Gedolei Yisrael, without a doubt, and no one should have a chas v'shalom taina that, oh, you didn't put them on a ventilator, you did the wrong thing. Or even if they took organs from them, kidneys or whatever the case is, because the more the person's, on the brain dead, the other organs will deteriorate. They're not going to take those out and give it to people. So this is the first sheet that we want to concretize. Yes, Ellie?
Does that mean that it's appropriate to have
Yeah, I don't. Rav Schechter doesn't like that, so he's our Rebbe, so he doesn't like that because he's not sure about what's how that's going to be done. You know what I mean? So public policy wise, he's not a proponent of it. So we're Talmidim of his organ donation, correct? Because he doesn't, you don't know what's going to be with it, and you're not always in charge, Lomaisa. But I'm just saying, in theory, if you held like this Shita, right? We didn't say what his Shita was yet. I didn't mention him as. But this is the Shita of Rav Moshe, who said Rav Tamler, Rav Zalman Chemia, the Rabbanut's Psak, and the Chassam Sofer. And I remember Rav Tamler was very, very stark about this. I remember when I was your age, he holds like this very strongly. We didn't mention his own personal Shita, but you asked me on a practical question. I'm not a proponent of it because he says it's public policy wise. Well, we're going to get to it. We just said the first Shita first. Let's go, we'll go one at a time, okay? What, your first name is Ariel?
Yoni,
I'm sorry. Yes, Yoni, go ahead.
I think I just missed something. We said that according to Moshe,
yes,
that somebody who's brain dead is considered halachically dead because he's not breathing.
Yes,
right. But in the case where he had it, where they had an unsuccessful transplant,
but that fellow only had brain damage. Brain damage. Yeah, I stress that the tshuva that he has
the
there.
Brain damage again?
He has. I'm not an MD, but they're still functioning the brain, but it's been debilitated greatly.
He can breathe, though.
Yes, that was the case. That's why he was so upset about it. Brain damage, not brain dead. Okay, that's why I stressed that. Yeah, I'm glad he asked me that. What is your first name again?
Alex.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
According to the sheets, they started on a ventilator. Could they then decide to remove the ventilator?
Yes, that's a good question, Alex. Based on the Ramah, if we'll get to, Hasara Samonea today, I want to get to it. I think that might be, touching him. So that I already think is direct. I think. Obviously, I'm not poskening. But because the case of the Ramah is the guy's making noise outside, real external things. That I think is direct. I think so. Okay. So that's the first sheet. The other sheet on the extreme is Rav Bleich Shlita, and he claims that brain dead is not dead. A person is fully alive, and you need all your you need to be really dead with all your organs stopping halacha lamaisa. So that's the other extreme shita, and they have big machlekes with Tendler and Rav Bleich about this, and he's very, very strong about this. That's what he holds. In fact, he held that's what Rav Moshe held. But okay, whatever. It's hard to fight with Rav David without what Rav Moshe said. No. But okay, it's a different way of reading the tshuva. But his sheet is very strong that brain dead is not dead, and if you would take out his heart, you're killing the person. Okay, so that's the other sheet on the extreme. The middle sheet is Rav Shechter Shlita's sheet, which he always quotes from the Rav Zatzal that it's really a svek in the dina. Rav Shechter has a whole mahalach here. If you have time, it's kedai. I put it in the Mar Makom. It's in Simen Lamed Vav, where he builds up this mahalach, beautiful mahalach, that you need all the vital organs of a human being to stop functioning to be considered dead al pi din. And those vital organs are threefold: the heart, the brain, and the liver. And that's based on a Mishnah in Maseches Irkin on Daf Chof Amud Aleph, and it's based on the Rambam in Hilchos Irkin, where the Rambam writes this, that if a person's is irki alive, the Rambam says that if it's a organ that's not neshama tluya bo, then you don't have to give the worth of the whole human being. But if he says erich of his heart, if he says erich of his liver or of his head, then he has to give his whole worth of his body. And that's what the Rambam writes in the beginning of Perek Beis, Hilchos Irkin Halacha Aleph. It's also in Perek Det Vav and Hilchos Maisa Karbanos Halacha Beis. So anything that's a davar neshama tluya bo, then that is, if you need all three of those to stop in order to be labeled al pidin as dead. That's what he claims. And that's his mahalach based on this Rambam and the Mishnah in Maseches Irkin. Now, Rav Shechter is reading the Gemara that it's talking about lamaisa in a situation where a person, is dead. Could be that the Gemara was saying that it'll lead to death, but the way he read the Gemara was that the Gemara is saying without these three things, a person is dead. Now, based on this, he wants to say that that's the definition of what a ghosis is. A ghosis is someone's imminently about to die that has lost one of the three. That's what he wants to say, and he points out a Rambam in the Perush Mishnayis in Maseches Olos that says that a ghosis is in the process, the tahalich of death. That's the way he calls it, the tahalich of death, okay? And what he defines it as being one of those three things have been lost. That's how he defines what a ghosis is. I'll be doing the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayis, if I can, let me find the marker where he says, yes, Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav in the Perush Mishnayis and Olos, hanevak b'talich hamavis. That's what the definition of a ghosis is. So he wants to say it's a person has lost one of those three vital organs, and he claims that that's what the Rav held as well. Rav Shechter points out that was the sheet of the Rav Zatzal as well. So therefore, once a person has lost the ability, lost the function of all three, then a person is considered to be dead al pi din. But it seems, Lamaisa, that it's like, it's like al pi din. It seems like if you lose, you're on the way to death in that vein by losing one of the three. It's a geisis, and then al pi din, you need all three. So brain dead alone would not be considered to be dead. You're on the way to death, but you're not dead yet. So he always says it from the Rav that it's a sfeik in the din, so you have to be machmir in all directions. But the way he develops this mahalach here is that ghosis is one of the three, and then if you lose all three, then you're considered to be dead al pi din. So therefore he claims by brain dead cannot be dead because your heart is pumping, Baruch Hashem. And you're not breathing, your brain is dead, but the liver, I don't know what the function of the liver is, but the heart is still pumping. So therefore he says you cannot be considered to be dead. And that's it's a very unique approach, but that's what Rav Shechter Shlita's sheet is. And therefore he said from the Rav, it's a shaila that is a weighty question, and therefore it's a din of sveika to dina, and one would have to be machmer on it. Now, there is a sheet of the Rabbeinu Yoel, which I want you to know from the Ran in the sixth Perek of Gittin, that a ghosis means someone is it's very hard to define precisely, but a ghost, as he writes, is someone who's imminently about to die, but has lost his ability to speak. Because that chimes in well with that Targum Unculus, that Ruach Malo, that what separates a man from an animal is the ability to speak. So he says, if a person is imminently about to die, but he can still speak, he's not a ghosis. But Lamaisa, this definition of ghosis is the Talich of Misa, where one of the three has mentioned. So what emerges is you have really three shitas on this question of brain death. You have Rav Tendler and the Rabbanut and Rav Zalman Nechemia, Shlita, and Rav Moshe, the Rav David Feinstein, quotes from Shimon Moshe, that it's breathing, brain dead, it would be dead. Another sheet of Rav Bleich that says he's still alive, and Rav Shechter is basically saying, from the Rav, it's Sveik and Adina, but even more, not really Sveik and Adina, but it's called a ghosis, basically, because one of the three have been lost, but not all of them. So therefore, Alpidin, person is still alive. So that's those are the three shittas. What your Arye? What is your first name?
Zach.
I'm sorry. Yes, Zach. Go ahead.
What organs does Rav Bleich require to be dead that Rav Shechter is not?
What's the difference between them? You mean?
I mean, are they the lungs? I mean, that's
not. Yeah. What's the difference? The way I understood it, Zach, is that you mamish have to be, like, you know, dead, like Leisman the Pollock, and like everyone in the world would say you're dead. You know what I'm saying? Whereas Rav Shechter is saying the precise Hagdar is those three, Neshama, Ivarmish, and Neshama, Tluyabo.
And the lungs are not considered
that? I don't think it's to exclude. That's the ones he just quotes, you know. I don't think it's to exclude, you know, you're right. Whatever would be needed.
I thought it's based on the Sogan Erechim.
Yeah, so yeah, but it does say neshama hatluyabo.
It doesn't say I'm there with my lungs.
Yeah, but it does say neshama hatluyabo. That's what the definition is, neshama hatluyabo. So I don't know, would he expand it to outside of that? Push-up shot, I don't know, I would imagine he would, but like Daniel's saying, he doesn't mention that, but maybe that's what he held, he knew medically. I would imagine it wouldn't exclude, you know. Yes, Ellie.
So it seems like there's a really big napkin, you know, whether Rav Shechter holds that it's a suffix, or whether he holds that it, the person is.
Yeah, I mean, the way he builds up the mahalach here is that you're a ghosis, which is brain dead, without all three. But I've heard him many times say from the Rav, it was a sveik of the dina.
If it's a sveik of the dina, then we can say earlier that Rav Shechter holds that suffix chayolam is docha. If this person is, and if you have a situation where the organs from this person can go to another individual, then you have a suffix, you have a suffix chayola, and that should be docha the bade chayisha.
Well, no matter what, Rav Shechter's not going to hold. That's what he said from the Rav. In the end, you know, there's a famous machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. About in Bab Mesiyah Samach Alaf, you have two guys with the canteen, right? And one guy has the canteen. So Rabbi Kiva says Chaya Kodman. But what he points out in the end of the piece is that the Rav held like this, the Rav held like this shtark, Halacha Lamaisa, that, you know, despite the fact that a person is brain dead, that's what he said, he's still alive. And the chola, the second chola that's going to get his heart, is being Mechayim himself through the death of his friend. Even Rabbi Kiva is going to answer that. You follow me?
Yeah.
Even Rabbi Kiva is going to answer that. Because in the case in the Gemara, Lamaisa, you know, he had his canteen, so it wasn't a shayla. He wasn't b'sakana. You know what I mean? So that's why he held stark that the person that's brain dead is still alive and it would be usher. He's basically, the guy that receives the heart is really saving himself through the death of his friend. So that's going to be the din. Those are the three sheikhs. Like I said, you have to be, ask your Rav and, these are shilas that no one should ever have, chas v'shalom. But this is a weightiest shila a person could ever have. Okay, fine. Let's get to now the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, let's get to the Shulchan Aruch, and then I wanted to get to, if we have time today, because we have a lot of dinim to start tomorrow. About I remember there's a few fellows who've asked me, you know, how to be Masadar Levaya. you know, rabbis are a little bit younger. I said, did you ever do that in Smichis? They said no. So I said, if I'm ever going to teach Hilchos Aveilus, I think we should spend a little bit of time on how to be Mesarer Levaya. Unfortunately, one of the guys in the shul's mom just passed away this morning. Okay, so let's get to Simon Shin Lamed Zayin. It says, Chol Shemes Lo Meis Emo Dino Sol Shemet Chitrov Daitolov and Korin Chalukov and Bochon Osam and Mespidim Funnish Lishabli Mashtikin and Samanachim Ponov. Someone that's very ill and he lost a loved one, if you're going to tell him that he lost a loved one, he might lose it and he might die. So therefore, you don't tell him. You don't do kriya in front of him. You don't cry. You don't do a eulogy in front of him. And guys that are going to come in and tell him, you quiet them down. You tell them not to say anything so that he shouldn't get hurt. You have to use your seichel. You know, in general, you're not supposed to actually say, the Gemara says in Psachim, that someone has died. So Gemara quotes a pasuk in Ksuvim. You're not supposed to say that. A lot of times it's impossible to get around it. So you have to tell the person to pay a shiva call, to go to the Levaya. But in general, just to start schmoozing and say people die, it's against the din. The Gemara says you're not supposed to do that. In fact, let's just mention it now. It's in the last sif in Shin Lamed Tes. The minig is to spill out, in Shin Lamed Tes Sifei, the minig is to spill out all the water that's in the neighborhood of a mace. So the Shachter in Sifkot Tes quotes two reasons. And the one reason is to notify everyone is dead. Because you're not supposed to say verbally that someone's dead. But if someone starts pouring out of the water, they're going to figure out that there's a death. Plus the fact he says the Malach HaMavis might put a Tipas Dam HaMavis in the water, and we're concerned with that. And then he quotes Rachman Otzlan from the Tashbetz, that he saw someone drink from the water, and he died, Rachman Otzlan. But it's interesting, he points out that in Orachayim, that if you have Maim Shalonu, which was, you know, prepared for the baking matzahs, that you don't have to pour out in the base. But that's an interesting din about, you know, if you have to say it, you have to say it. It's a Sorach Mitzvah, tell a guy to go to Levaya, tell a guy to pay a shivka, but it's time to say it, it's against the Gemara. Okay, that's Simon Shin Lamed Zayin. Let's see Shin Lamed Ches. The din is in Sif Aleph about Vidui. Vidui is very important. In fact, I told this fellow yesterday, his mom died this morning at 4:30, so I told him yesterday that he should say Vidui for her, and he told me he did. If someone has the cognition to say Vidui themselves, they should say Vidui based on the Gemara and Shabbos. And as I said, we prefaced to him, many people have said Vidui and they've lived 60 years, and many people died without saying Vidui, so I don't want you to get scared by you saying it. It's very important to say that. You have to be nice and kind, of course. And someone who does Vidui is a Chelik Alom Haba. If you can't do it verbally, you do it in your heart. If he doesn't know how to, then you tell him, you say it for him. If he's so sick or she's so sick, you say it actually for him. It's in the Madrich, it's in the Siddur. And these things you don't say in front of people that are not learned, because they might cry and they might cause him to be upset and he might die. And in Sif Beit, it lists off the vidui of the Shchibera that a person says. A big Talmud Chacham I know was in San Francisco during the earthquake. He was in a hotel, and he Mamish told me he thought he was going to die, big Talmud Chacham, and he told me he said vidui. Mamish said vidui. I don't know, it was in the 90s, right? It was during one of the World Series, right? That's the only reason I should remember it. But he said vidui, and people have said vidui. People have said vidui, and it's a very important thing that should be said. And then the Rama just points out, if you want to say vidui like on Yom Kippur or Shus Piyoto, if you want to say more of an extended one, it's okay. All right, let's see Shin Lamed Tes Sif Aleph. This is a very important halacha as anything, but it's a shayla of murder. That's why I say it's very important. A person that's a gosis is chayla kol dvarav. The Shach points out you can't do anything to hasten someone's death. It's a shayla of ritzicha. But he is chayla kol dvarav. That means he can give a get, he can give a matana. And even though he points out that maybe he could go into a house that he's omen bo, even though Rov goes to Lemisa, points out later in Shinai that it's also to go to Abai Sheish bo Gosis if you're a Kohen. But nonetheless, you can't touch a Gosis because you might be Mikar of Misoso, and that's what the Mechaber writes here. You can't tie his cheeks, you can't anoint him, and you can't rinse him, and you can't even move a pillow from under him because you're moving him. and you can't put under him sand or things of pottery or earth, and you can't put on his stomach anything that where you're going to be moving the person. You can't close his eyes, achetetz nafsho. And anyone who does this, the Mechaber writes, is hari zeh shofech dam. Okay? And you don't do kriya, of course, because he's not dead. You don't do, you know, on the shoulders, cholets. You don't do a eulogy. And you don't bring in the aron to the house, God forbid, until he's nifter. And we don't say tziduk adin achetetze nafsho, which is a strange din. Not strange, but we don't follow that. If you, we actually say tziduk adin at the levaya. Because if you look at Siv Gimel, he says you say tziduk adin with the Sin Shishama. Tziduk adin we'll get to when we get to the Seder, the levaya. But when you get to the end of Tziduk Adin, where you get to Dynamis, the Mechaber says your Korea, the oval is Korea. So we don't say Tziduk Adin then. We say Tziduk Adin at the Levaya, okay? But the Mechaber, I don't know why the minig changed in the Beis Yosef. He quotes in the beginning of that Siman from the Ramban that the minig B'chol Mok would say Tziduk Adin with the Tziyah Shishama, but that's not our minig. We have to look into more why that's not our minig, but our minig is to say Tziduk Adin at the Levaya. I was thinking maybe that's because we need to Mekadashim Shamayim, and that's why when we get, we'll say it, but when you say it in Hebrew, and you should say it in English, that, you know, we don't complain against Hashem's din and dinim, and we don't complain against his judgments. It might be hard to be Mekabal the din, but we're Mekabal the din, and that's why Tzidik HaDin is so important. So maybe that's why we wait to when there are a lot of people are around, that we're Mefarsim that declaration that the Eibishter is in charge. It's like when you're Menachem Avil, the Gemara says above a comment, it's quoted here and later in the Shulchan Aruch, you're never supposed to say, oh, what can we do? What do you mean, what can we do? That's mashma that what? That if you could do something, you'd change it. That's kidufa shol makom. The Gemara has a baba kama lam chesem. It's like blaspheming the Eibishter. You don't say, what can we do? Mashma, you could have changed it. So, Lamai said, maybe that's what I was just thinking yesterday and preparing, maybe that maybe that's how the minig developed, that we do it at Tzidik Adin. Because we need to, I do, if you do a Levi and there are a lot of people that aren't from, you gotta, it's very important to say that. We're not complaining against Abishur's dinim. It might be hard to receive it, but you know, that's what Dayan Ha'emis is. When you hear someone's nifter, you say, Bruch Dayan Ha'emis. A lot of people forget the Hei Ayidiyah. It has to be Bruch Dayan Ha'emis. Yes, yes, Zach.
So should Should you not say until after the funeral?
No. You say it when you hear. You say it with Shem Hashem, with the Shiva Krovim, when you do it right before Kriya, when we get to that, Lamaisa. But if it's not a Shiva Krovim, you say Bruch Dayan Emes. Absolutely. Okay. You can say it. But I'm just saying the minig is, like the Mechaber and Sefal Tzev Gimel, the minig is to do Tzidik Adin at the Levaya, not with the Tzis Hashem. Okay. The Ramah here points out the following. The Ramah here in Shin Lamed Tes points out that you should not hew, or in our terminology, you shouldn't open up a grave, Lamaisa, until the person has died. You know, it's like an Ayin Hara. And it's Usser, he points out here, in the Beis Yosef, points out, the Rabbeinu Yerucham, Hashem Rebu Nachasin, it's Usser to dig up a grave, Lamaisa, it's Usser to dig up a grave until the day that you're going to bury the person. Meaning that if a person died, Rahman Aslan, yesterday, you shouldn't open the grave yesterday, because the Levaya is going to be today. You open only open up the kever the day of the Levaya. Okay, and that's what Beis HaKfaris do. And he says there's a sakana bedavar. If you look in the Beis Yosef, it says, Al Pi Kabbalah, that someone, God forbid, another person will die within 16 days, Rahman Aslan. So we never open up a kever unless it's the day of the Levaya. Okay? Then the Ramah points out it's usher to be goyer memes, bless you, that'll die quicker. So halacha lamais, it's usher to move away a pillow, it's usher to move away feathers, and as the Shach points out, if you look in the Shach in Sifkat and Zion, he points out from the Teres Azav the Levush, Yifrek the Kashi says, why is it usher to move away the pillow or the feather? Why is that different than Asaras Kol? Later on in the Ramah says, it's also to put keys, he says, under the head, the mice of the person. But he says something that's making noise outside, chotevetzim, or to put salt on his tongue, you could stop doing that. Because that's considered a hasara samonea. Mutala sirub misham, dein maisa klau, el shamasra monea. That's what we mentioned earlier in Shir from Ramosha. So the shock quotes from Lavush, what's the difference? So he answers, there's a big difference. When you actually move the body itself, that's a problem. When you move the feather and the pillow, that's why it's a serious shiloh about doctors and nurses about dealing with the ghosts. It's not simple. These aren't simple shilohs. I mean, on one hand, that's their job, but on the other hand, it's not so posh. You have to be very cognizant of that. I remember when my father was nifter, Baruch Hashem, we were, let's just mention that at Sif Dalid, we were zocha to be by him when he was nifter, and that's in Sif Dalid. You shouldn't leave a person that's going to die, that he shouldn't be alone, and it's a mitzvah to stand there, the Ramah says, when someone's nifter, Chiyol LeNetzach, we actually saw him nifter, but I was very careful not to touch him, because Lamaisa could hasten the death, which is a shalor rachmanu l'tzlan of Ritzichin. So we have to be very careful about this alpidin. So that's this din of Hasara Samone, and that's the issue we said about the medicines that Ramosha said, that the fellow, if he doesn't want to do the medicine, it's in his choice to choose, because by stopping giving the medicine is like not giving him, the salt on his tongue. What is your first name?
Yosef,
yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So just for clarification,
yes.
We're talking about Monea, the noise, so that's okay, but when it comes to a feather or a pillow, that's too close to the body?
Yes, that's in fact moving, that's what he says. Isser hu mineshim nonea hagoses. Yosef, you're moving the ghosts. Yeah.
Right, so for example, when we're talking about the respirators,
yes.
That's very similar to that.
Yes, that's what Alex asked before. So but maybe you're moving.
If the moving, so maybe that's why it might not be okay. Not
good,
because
that exactly, life. That's what I was, very nice point. That would crystallize exactly, because it would be a mice of a goofa. That's what I was saying. Very good. Excellent.
But I mean, I'm not completely familiar, but I mean, when they give him nutrition as well, and aren't you able to cut it off without moving the body itself?
Well, we said hydration you got to do anyway, remember? We follow, that's the minute, to follow that middle approach. You always got to give hydration.
Why would that be different than a respirator or any of the other options we have? Wouldn't it be the same idea? We're just going to be monea.
No, but we're talking about a case where the respirator was already on. To remove the respirator, that's what we're talking about. That would be Maisa Begufa, which would be Yasser, Kirav Mirtzich. Okay, to put some, what is your first name again?
Moshe,
to put someone on a respirator, that's what we're saying, that would be out of the rubric of the general tradition, just to give the person hydration. But once a person is on the respirator, that's why I'm saying, yeah, I got to have everything planned. You got to be your own advocate with your loved one. Yes, Ellie, go ahead.
The Shach said in Sif Katan Vav,
yes.
In regards to opening a grave,
yes.
If it's Erev Shabbos and it's getting close to Erev Shabbos, how does that play out, Lemaisa, if you have a
Gosis
and Shabbos is coming?
Yeah, Lemaisa, we never do it. We don't do it. If you have to, you push it off till Sunday. Yeah, you're never going to open it up till a person's nifter. Okay? All right. Yes, Yosef, go ahead.
So, in Gemara Ksuvos, we have a lot of cases where the Tvarim were open before, that people would have these Tvarim set aside. Not open,
right. You buy karka, but you don't open it. Okay? All right, let's Siv Beis. It says if someone comes over, Beis Yosef quoted, if someone comes over and says, I've seen your relative Akosis for 3 days already, I saw him on the third day, then you can assume he's nifter already. That's what the Shach says. Halacha l'maisa. When he's odel afanav, obviously he's alive, but if he's not around, then the Ramah says we assume that he's been nifter. Al Pidin. So that's a big shiloh that Pesachei Tshuva discusses, not really for us now, but it's a whole shiloh about situations came up with 9/11, you know, issues of Kaddish, you know, issues of Avelus, how does that relate to the Heter of an Aguna? You know, because if a person's already been knowing Shiva and saying Kaddish, that indicates maybe he's dead, so do those dinim go, how about Taya here? The Pesachei Tshuva discusses that. Al Pidin. So that's why that's really a different subject, but Lamaisa, it relates. Okay, I want to just finish up now. Let's get now how to Sadr Levaya. I want to do that to the end of Shir. So tomorrow, B'Hashem, we'll start Shin Mem. There really are two situations that come up when you have to do a Levaya. So let's do, I guess what's usually, I shouldn't say what's usually, but let's say they're going to have at the chapel, and then they're going to go to the cemetery. So let's do that first, and then the second one will be graveside, okay? So, firstly, person calls you, or in this day and age, texts you that they lost one of their seven relatives. So I happened to turn my phone on this morning after davening, and I had this text at 5:30 a.m. that he lost his mom. So what do you do? So let's start from the beginning. Obviously, you call the person, you know, obviously you express your condolences, and you're going to have to meet with the person, and you'll meet with the person to set when the Levaya should be, and go through the dinim of him about aninus, which we'll get to, when we get to all those halachas, you know. But you have to explain in the dinim. And then if you have time to, at that time, or meet with him later, to, if he wants you to give a hesped, that you speak about the person, interview the person about the person's life, a biography of the life, and writing a hesped takes time. And you have to meet with the person and go through the person's life and set up how the process of the levi in the chapel is going to work. Who's going to speak? You should encourage him to speak or her to speak. And that's what you'll do. Then you're also going to have to call the Chevra Kadisha to have the nifter and nifteris picked up from the hospital or nursing home or wherever, at home even. We just had a case a few weeks ago. Someone was nifter and home. One of the fellows in the shul's older man's wife. And the Chevra Kadisha will pick up the, it takes a while in America, you have to sign off that the person is dead, whether it's a doctor or an MD, and then the Chevra Kadisha picks up the mace. You know, there's minhagim of how to do it. There's something called hashkava. You put the mace on the ground if it can be done. Sometimes hospitals don't allow it, but it's a concept called hashkava. You actually lay the mace on the ground. You bring the mace out, and then the mace is brought to the Jewish chapel with the shomer there saying Tehillim and watching to make sure everything is going to be done properly. Now, at the chapel...
It just relates to the point that you just said. Do you need a shomer for the way from the house?
You should. In our Chevra Kadisha, we have there's a few balabatim that do it. If you can't, you can't. You always try your best to have a Jewish driver. They have a van and they pick up the mace and the nifteris or the nifter. And should always try to be with a Jewish person if you can. Always.
Is it worthwhile to? I'm asking because I had a situation over the summer where we were out of town and I was a rabbinic intern out of town. The rabbi wasn't there and somebody passed away, and the way that they do it out there is that the ambulance, the hospital, whatever system, a hospice, takes the person to the Jewish chapel, and there wasn't a shomer.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
And I wasn't sure whether it was worthwhile to drive behind the car.
If you can. Like I said, if you can, it's always better.
I did.
Yeah, and that's not ideal. It's not ideal. Right. So thank God in New York, New Jersey, you know, we have situations. Though in our Chevra, they go right to the hospital. Or they go right to the nursing home. And, you know, my father, when he was nifter, say, 1:30 on a Friday, the guys from Psaic, we were malav him out by 2 o'clock. So let's get to the chapel. Now, at the chapel, they're different than Hagen. My Mesorah is that you'll tear the Kriya with the family after the Hespedim at the chapel. You have to do Shas Chimum. Now, if you're there, you Shas Yisiyas Hashem, when we get to the Kriya, you tear Kriya. I was there by my dad, Shas Yisiyas Hashem, so I tore Kriya. But if they're not there, many Rabbanim will do the Kriya before the service begins in the chapel. Okay, my Mesorah is not. Why is that Shas Chimum? I thought Shas Chimum should be at the end, by the Hespedim, when they're all done. So that's my Mesorah, but at the chapel, you'll begin with a few Kapitlach of Tehillim. I always recommend to do Hebrew and English. If there are Rabbanim there, you can ask Rabbanim to say Mechabed Rabbanim. Of course, you ask the family to who they want to lead. If it's a woman that was Nifteres, you say Eish Eschayil, both in Hebrew and English. And then you have the Hespedim. after the Kapitloch, and then you'll say the Kalmale. And then you'll say the Kalmale in Hebrew and in English, the Chazen. In days where there's no Tachanun, of course, you don't say a Mole, and you add on Michtam Ladovit, you add an extra Kapitl. And then, of course, you should bring a scissors. I always bring a scissors, because if you don't have a scissors, I don't like the blades, because the blades sometimes cause a cut. So it's always good to bring a scissors. And we'll get to the details of Kriya. We'll start tomorrow. But I don't, you know, if you ever have to do a Levaya for someone's not observant, I will not cut a ribbon. They want to do a ribbon. The conservative movement, they put on ribbons instead of, you know, cutting their shirts. They want to put a ribbon. They can put. I tell them nicely, but, you know, I was trying to encourage them to bring an old sweater, you know, bring an old shirt to try to do Kriya. It's very meaningful. Some people think it's like archaic and they won't want to touch it. But I'm not comfortable cutting the but cutting the ribbon is kind of like you're mechazik that minik. So you should encourage beforehand in your meeting with the family to bring bring you know clothes that they can do it. And then we're malava the mace outside to the hearse, and then you drive after the hearse if you're going to the Beis HaKfaris. So that's really the service in the chapel. Okay, then when we get to the cemetery with the hearse, what you do is you'll if you're driving with the hearse, many times, sometimes I'll even drive with the hearse, leave my car by the chapel, the Jewish chapel. So, because a lot of times the driver of the hearse is not Jewish, so some are not comfortable with that. So you can drive along with the hearse in the front seat. So then you get to the Beis HaKfaris, and it's preferable for sure to have pallbearers. You ask the family who wants to be the pallbearers. There could be pallbearers from the chapel taking the mace, the aron, to the hearse. It's a kibbut. And at the Beis HaKfaris, you do the shiva seven stops. You say, Yosheb B'Seser. You know, you say it seven times. At each stop, you say Yosheb B'Seser until the end of the kapitel, at the end of the word, and then you say it seven times. Those are called the seven stops. Kenega the shiva rakim, malava the neshama. So it's sometimes it's hard to do because you're close to the kever. Sometimes it's easier to do because you're farther away from the kever. Sometimes it's hard because it's heavy for guys, but it's a very important thing to do. Days where there's no tachna, you don't do it. But that's the minig. So then you bring the aron to the kever, and then what you'll do is because you had the whole service. Many will do at the chapel, ask for mechila. You can also ask for mechila as you're putting the lowering the aron. And you lower the aron.
How do you ask for mechila?
English, Hebrew? English, Hebrew, wherever you want to do. You make sure you ask for mechila. You can do it now at the Beis HaKfaris. You can do it at the Jewish chapel. And then you lower the Beis HaKfaris. You lower the aron to the kever. And it's very important to encourage everyone to shovel. The Rav used to say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa kura. We learned it this year. Takbor tikbarenu. And the minig is that the first three shovels you do backwards to show that our lives are kind of upside down now that we've lost a loved one. And the minig is not to hand the shovel to one another. You put the shovel back in the dirt. And the minig is to shovel the whole thing. Even if it takes a half an hour, if you're one guy by yourself, okay, you don't want to get sick and, God forbid, you know, faint if it's in the middle of the summer. If you're the only guy there that can shovel, it's very difficult. So that's a bad situation. But the best you can is to try to do the best you can to shovel completely, and you create, the Taz says a tzura sakever, where you create a little bit of a hill, and you take the shovel and you make an indentation around it, and then you have, completed the kfura. Like I said, if the only one, if you have no choice, what you at least have to do is cover the aron on the bottom with dirt, you know, on the top of the aron. That at least you have to try to do. I mean, if you're the only guy there, try to do the best you can, but, you know, what are you going to do? I've been in that situation. So basically you do that, then you finish the Levaya, and then you wait till everyone leaves. And then you have the non-Jewish bulldozer helps. I mean, you know, or they help shovel it because you really have no choice. But that's a situation where I had no one was there to help me at all. So, but that's a mitzvah kuru, and at the end of that, we say tzidduk adin, which is a very long tefillah, which is very important to say out loud with Hebrew and English. Everyone really should say it at the levaya, but usually the rav is the only one who has the sitter there, And then you say the special Kaddish, which is the same Kaddish as the Siyum on a Masechta. And then there's different Minhagim. But as we said yesterday, you have to form a Shura. You have the Aveilim walk through. You say, Amakim Minachim Eschem. And then the Rav should take a piece of grass and throw it over his right shoulder and say, Yatzitzu Eitzer, Esav. And then you say, you know, for a man, you say, Lech B'Shalom. For a woman, you say, Lechi B'Shalom. And you always end the Levi by saying we should only meet at Simchus. So that's the process of doing a chapel and then doing the cemetery. Okay? Yes, Zach.
So you said it should be said by everyone with a pillar?
Yes, but the problem is no one has the sitter. So the Rav says it out loud.
And the Krovim and then the people who are watching.
They should, but like I said, no one has sitter. So, you know, the mice of the Rav does it for everyone. But it's important he has to say what it's all about. Yes, Daniel. The changing shoes should be done right after the shura.
Right after the shura.
Yes, if you can. If you can, it should be done right after you walk through the shura. We'll get to it. I mean, Rav Shachter Shlita had a chumra to wear the sneakers even b'shas aninus, but the minig is to only do it after the shura. That's the standard sheet. We'll get to that. We'll get to the Rabban whether it's Yisuri Avelis Toch Aninus. So that's the process of, like I said, a chapel and the gravesite. Okay? Now let's just finish up Shir with graveside, okay? Graveside is, you don't have the chapel at all. So you're going to do everything at the graveside. Basically what you'll do is you'll begin, and I forgot to mention this, if you haven't been in the Beis HaKfaris in 30 days, there's a special bracha you say, Bruchat Hashem Achai Mason, with a Atah Gibor, and you should say that out loud to be motzi people. And that's what you'll do in the first scenario, and also now. You'll take the mace out of the yeshiva, the seven stops, and then you'll put the mace on the top. You tell the non-Jewish graveyards, most of the times they're very nice. Once in a while you have some rough guys. But if they're rough, tell them, you know, you're the ones officiating, so please try to accommodate us. You'll put the mace, the R on top of the board on the top, and that will be where you'll do the whole service. Meaning you'll do the Kapitlach, and you'll do the Hespedim, and you'll tear Kriya there. So instead of being in the chapel, the graveside will just be, the Aron will be on top, on the board, on top. When you finish all the Kapitlach with the Hespedim, and you tear Kriya, you ask for Mechila, then you'll lower the mace, and then you finish up like the way we said the first scenario. So, you know, the notion of doing the graveside is, if there's not a lot of people around, I mean, you don't have to have a whole chapel, but there's not going to be a lot of people. You don't want it to be a bazillion. So you might want to recommend to the family to do graveside. If there's a lot of people, then it's more mechubah to do the chapel. So you have to work it out. You have to be, you know, obviously I don't need to tell you to be nice, but sometimes you need to be told to be nice, unfortunately. You know, you try the best you can to, you know, fulfill a mitzvah min haTorah of kfura, which is a mitzvah min haTorah. And to be very stark about, unfortunately, Leviathans in America are becoming more and more exorbitant, and unfortunately there are Yidim in America that are doing cremation, which is a terrible zach. It's horrible. Because it's much cheaper, unfortunately. We have to be very strong to, you know, speak out against that, and if a person has no money, so hopefully you have some stock of fund we talked about yesterday to try to deal with it. Yes, Ellie?
Do you usually say, sir, if it's all the chapel?
Yes. You'll take the mace, leave the mace by the hearse, wait till everyone gathers, and then you do the seven stops. Yes, absolutely. If it's not a day where there's no tachlis. Yes, Moshe.
What was that part with the grass you mentioned?
At the very end, when the people walk through the krovim, walk through the shura, there's a minig as you pick up a piece of grass and you throw it over your right shoulder, and there's a certain phrase you say, V'yatzitzu Eitzer, it's based on a pasuk. It's in the Madrich. I mentioned yesterday one should purchase a Madrich. I have the old Madrich and also the new RCA one that they put out like 15, 20 years ago. It's good to have both of them. And then when everyone leaves, usually the grave diggers give you the head marker, and you put the head marker down. Maybe say an extra kapitlach, and of course, you know, everyone washes their hands before they, either it's the Beis HaKfaris or before you enter your house. You should wash your hands outside, have someone, family members leave, you know, water outside. If I come back to yeshiva, I've had, you know, tell me and just put bring the cup out. So, you know, you sit down, you put take out a check, but I can't tell you, I've helped like three or four rabbanim like last year of how to do levaya. But, you know, you think about it and it'll be very mechubad and the family will be very appreciative. And you know you're doing the right thing for the neshama. So, Bez Hashem, we should never have to do this, but you don't have to wait till you have smicha. So, let's say, I don't know, you're in a scenario that, you know, someone needs you to do a levaya, you can do it now. You don't have to have the smicha yet. Yes, Daniel?
Are there any other, anything else that has to be taken into account when going there to show with the mace?
There should always be a shomer with it, you know, with the mace. There should always be a shomer. Yeah, so that's impossible. You do the best you can. But they say in the LL, the fellow that runs it, he tries to be by it till it goes to the plane. There's a fellow in Borough Park that runs it. You try the best you can. And by customs, when they get there, it's a throw. So you do the best you can to always try to do that. That Yidim try to open up, you know, open up the kever. And, you know, by the coffin, always try to have Yidim involved. Okay, so tomorrow, Bez Hashem, we're back to regular time, 1:15. And Thursday, I have to actually do this Leviah. You know, let me just close with that. The Leviah's on Thursday. She was nifted this morning. So what's that all about? He has a sister in Florida that's driving up. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, you know, you always want to try to bury the person as soon as possible. So, but what can we do? You know, you're allowed to delay it, L'shem Krovim, before Krovim. Yerushalayim, they don't. The minute they bury right away, they don't wait for anybody. But here, you know, we had no choice. So tomorrow we'll do 1:15 and also Thursday because I made sure the Levi would be started at 9:30, so I'll be back. So we'll start tomorrow, Shin Mem. Okay, Hilchos Kriya. Okay, all right, everyone have a good day. Oh, yeah, Yes, Moshe. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Wonderful, yeah.
That's the new one.